Now, I know someone who went to the gym every day well into his 90s, and I wonder what your approach to exercise has been as you clock up the years. Perhaps you've taken up and discovered an entire new sport or hobby. Life Matters listener Bob Tomlinson from Grafton certainly did. He discovered scuba diving at 62 and duck to water, let me tell you. He plans to keep on diving well into his 80s. 6 years on, Bob is wanting to spread the word now that diving isn't just a game for young lungs. Welcome to Life Matters, Bob.
Thank you.
How did you discover diving?
I was coming back from overseas and a friend who's 20 years younger than me rang me and said, would you like to do an open water course? I'm going up to Thailand to do it.
And were you tempted? Clearly.
Yes. Well, my wife and I stopped over in Singapore. I went up to Phuket or Kamala and did two courses there, and she came home and then I came home.
So what was that first dive like for you?
I still remember it. We were very lucky, actually. This is the first open water dive in water, not in the pool.
Yes.
You start off in a pool. We dived straight down onto a displaying cuttlefish.
Wow.
And I don't know if you know
Stunning.
What they do, but they sort of ripple with colours. It was amazing. Yeah. I was hooked.
And you were hooked. Was there an assumption that you need a younger set of lungs to do diving?
No, you don't. In fact, most of the technical divers I know are, you know, mature men. The more courses you do and the more experienced you become, the deeper you are technically allowed to dive to. I've got advanced Trimix qualifications, which is a technical qualification, and my cards say I'm allowed to dive to 100 metres of seawater.
So take us to the Red Sea, where you dived nearly to 100 metres.
Yeah.
Describe that experience of diving far down in the Red Sea.
Well, it was amazing for a couple of reasons. One, we dived in a place called Thomas Canyon, which is basically where Africa is splitting off from the Middle East. And we went down a wall to about 35, 40 metres, and then a little bit across the floor, a wall of coral, I should say, and then across the floor, and there was a gap in the floor about 2 and a bit metres wide, and it went straight from just round about 40 metres down to 90-something metres. And it's called Thomas Canyon.
Mm.
And the amazing thing about it was at the bottom you didn't even need a torch. The Red Sea is just clear.
Unbelievable. Is there life down there?
Yes, fish, but not coral and things like you see. You see, most of the life is in the first 30, 35 metres.
So you've also become a great fan, I gather, of diving shipwrecks.
Oh, I love wrecks.
Which must be really rather amazing, discovering the sort of skeleton, exploring the skeleton of an old boat, perhaps even an ancient boat.
The earliest boats I've dived on are Second World War, and most of the ones I've dived were in Truk or Chuuk or Micronesia. There's a large lagoon up there. It's 250 square kilometres, the Truk Lagoon. The state is Chuuk. It's part of the Federated States of Micronesia, and after World War One, it was handed to the Japanese because they helped us in the First World War.
Mm.
And came the Second World War, they built it up as a naval base. And I think it was 1944, the Americans, rather than invading it, took five carrier groups there and devastated it. That's the only word for it. They sank every ship that was there, they got rid of all the planes, and they just left it, bypassed it.
And there are many tens of boats under the water there, aren't there?
I think there's 53. I'm not sure, but about 53 wrecks there.
Describe the experience, Bob, of diving that site.
Well, it's amazing because they're all full. I mean, you dive down and, well, there's one San Francisco Maru and it's got tanks on the deck. You dive in others and they're full of trucks or munitions. There's torpedoes. There's planes in holds.
Is it dangerous?
Well, everything's dangerous, I suppose. No. If you obey the simple rules of diving and take care, no, I don't think it is.
So it sounds almost like they've kind of been frozen in time.
Yes, and they're gradually rusting away. One of the biggest problems that shipwrecks have in the Pacific is the amount of fuel oil and things like that in the holds, and that they'll gradually rust and that can get out. In fact, I think in Palau a few years ago, pumped one out to stop the problem.
You're into something called technical diving, I gather.
When I can.
What is it? I'm not sure about that. I don't think I've heard of it before.
Well, recreational diving, you've got a computer and you get in the water and you've got your air tank and you've got a pressure gauge. And when you come up is when either your computer said you've been down so long you'll be going into decompression and you don't want to do that, into deco, or you're getting low on air. So you come up, do your 3-minute stop and you finish your dive. With technical diving, you actually plan the dive before you dive. You say, I'm going to go to this depth, I need this much gas, I've got to carry it on my back, you plan the type of gas you're taking, you do go into deco and you usually carry what we call...
So deco, you mean decompression?
Decompression. So on the way up you do lots and lots of stops and you breathe increasingly large percentages of O2.
So is it about doing a sort of more high precision dive? What's the deal?
Yes it is. That also lets you go deeper and stay down longer. That's probably the primary reason. If you don't go into deco and you dive to 50 metres, you don't get very long on the bottom. If you're happy to go and spend 20 minutes on the way up, stopping, you can spend a lot longer on the bottom.
There's a real science to this.
Yes.
And there's also a very important social science to diving because you are totally reliant on your diving buddy, aren't you? How important is that relationship?
You want to be able to trust him, that's for sure. And you need him to know what sort of gear you're diving with, and he needs to trust you that neither of you are going to go and do anything stupid. And if the worst comes to the worst, they're there to render help. One of the rules of tech diving is the rule of thirds. You have a third to go out on, your air, a third to come back on, and a third for your buddy if things go very bad.
And you've dived throughout Australia too, have you?
Not as much as I'd like. I've dived basically from Sydney north to past Brisbane.
And any memorable sights? I mean, particularly the wilderness that we have under the water.
Well, I live not far from Coffs Harbour, and Jetty Dives down in Coffs Harbour. I've dived an awful lot of dives with them and done a lot of training. They're excellent, and they dive out at South Solitary Islands. And you can dive there and see heaps and heaps of grey-nurse sharks and lots of coral, everything like that. It's fabulous.
You've swum with whale sharks, I gather.
Yeah, I did that last time in the Philippines.
What do they look like?
Big. Huge. Gentle giants. Very, very big.
Much bigger than you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how much bigger?
Oh, gee. that's like asking a fisherman how big the fish were. 5-6 metres.
Yeah. What was that like?
Brilliant.
But I gather that some local divers were causing you a bit of distress.
Look, one of the problems with diving with things that big is the interaction between divers and the life in the sea. And unfortunately, sometimes the people don't consider the sea life as much as they should.
You sort of wonder what the point is of actually doing the dive if you're going to be a cowboy about it.
Well, we were given a very long briefing before we went in that we weren't allowed to be within 3 metres of the front of the whale shark and a bit further around the tail for obvious reasons, not to touch it, not to do anything with it. It's very unusual to do scuba diving with whale sharks. They don't tend to let it happen very often. And this place they were. We all obeyed the rules, and yet up on the surface there were the snorkelers and they were swimming up, touching them, grabbing them, and it was just horrible.
Mm.
You don't touch. And now it's been closed down in that area for a while.
Could you have imagined, Bob, that you'd have these sorts of adventures?
No.
Under the sea in your 60s, right throughout your 60s, and you say you want to dive on well into your 80s.
Yeah, I hope to do recreational diving for a lot longer. The technical side I mightn't be able to do as long because just the physical side of it, because you've got, you know, twin tanks on your back and up to 3 stage bottles hanging around you. And just getting off the boat's the hard part. Once you're in the water, it's okay because you're neutrally buoyant. But the other day I had trouble standing up with the tanks. We were doing a wreck in Cebu, yes.
Does your wife dive with you?
No. She's a New Zealander and doesn't like water. Making tea only.
You did mention that you want something called a rebreather, but she won't let you have one.
No, she won't.
What is a rebreather? You're obviously very much into the kind of technical and daredevil end of the diving spectrum?
Well, simply put, a rebreather, when you breathe on scuba, you breathe in and you breathe out. And when you breathe out, the gas that you're exhaling bubbles out.
Yep.
And is lost. And I don't know if you know it, but each breath you only use a fifth of the available oxygen, approximately, that's available in the air. So that's why CPR works, etc.
Yep.
If there was no O2 left, it just wouldn't work. What a rebreather does is when you breathe out, you capture the outgoing breath, put it through a chemical that takes the CO2 out of it, and then add a bit more O2 to it to get the right mix back again.
So it's recycling your air.
Recycling your air, round and round and round.
So now, does that allow you to stay longer? Is that the point?
Yeah, it does two things. One, you don't have to have bigger tanks because you don't use anywhere near the amount of gas. And two, you're always given the exactly right amount of oxygen that gives you the best balance that's possible. You actually can set this, whereas with say you're breathing air, you're always going to get 21% oxygen.
Wow, this intrigues me. You know, when I had a go at diving in my teens, I struggled with understanding the dive tables at that point, but I didn't realise there was so much precision involved.
Do you know 80% of people who do their open water course don't ever dive again?
Yeah.
80%. Yeah, to me, that's really, really amazing. There's something wrong with the business model, in my opinion.
Well, I won't share my experience. It was terrible. We were wearing woolens under wetsuits with holes in them and all sorts of shocking stuff. That was many years ago, though.
It can still happen. I came back after doing my course, and I did it in Camilla. For my first two courses, it was open water and advanced open water. Came back to Australia, and of course, in Camilla, they had all new gear because of the tsunami just before then. And so the guy had to buy all new gear. Butte, I used higher gear there, no problem. Came back to Australia, went diving, and the gear was so terrible I wouldn't dive.
Well, look, you've got a bit of a message for other people in your peer group about your passion for diving. What is it?
Go and do it. You don't have to be young to go and dive. You've looked at the water. All you have to do is be able to swim and pass the fitness test at the start. And if you're a healthy 60-year-old, go and learn to dive. It's fabulous.
It's changed your life by the sounds.
Oh, yes, totally, totally. Yeah, my wife hates it because if you go overseas now, I'd look at where we can dive first.
Yes. Let's get out of the water.
Yes.
Bob, you also have another treasured pastime. Model aeroplanes.
Yeah, I've been doing this a lot longer.
What are you up to?
I like building, and unfortunately, model aeroplanes now, or radio control ones, tend to be already built for you when you get them. It's a sign of the times. People don't have time to do stuff, and so you tend to buy them and put them together in a couple of hours, and you can go and fly them. I like to build from a box of balsa and end up with something that flies, which is quite fun.
And often really large ones.
Yeah, I'm building at the moment a P-40, which has got a 2.1-metre wingspan, and my next one's got a 3.6-metre wingspan. It's going to be a Super Constellation, a copy of the one that Connie, the HARS in Wollongong, have got. Goes down there. It's one of the only two flying Super Constellations in the world, for a bit of trivia.
I'm loving it.
And it's in Wollongong.
You're a man of many passions, clearly.
Just two. Oh, no, not true.
But you've managed to balance a working life with developing wonderful hobbies.
I don't work anymore.
Well, it sounds like you do doing the stuff you really love.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters.
No problem.
It's a good story, isn't it? Bob Tomlinson, who's discovered scuba diving in his 60s, and he's going to keep on diving under the water well into his 80s. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. Coming up, some of your feedback.